Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about the more things change, the more they stay the same. The platinum rule still applies. And our guest today is Iris Jones. Iris is the Chief Marketing and Client Development Officer at Akerman. She oversees the firm's client development team to advance the overall strategic plan of the firm by continuing to grow the firm's client base while deepening existing client relationships. Iris works closely with firm leadership to build the firm's brand equity and position the firm as an influential thought leader and the law firm of choice for diverse clients in the firm's key practice areas. Iris was recently inducted into the Legal Marketing Association's Hall of Fame, and we are delighted to have Iris join us today. Hello, Iris, and welcome to the show.
Hi there, Guy. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I know how busy you are, so thank you for taking a little bit of time from your busy day and joining us here today.
My pleasure.
So, Iris, before we get started, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? How did you get started in the wonderful world of legal marketing?
Actually, thank you, Guy, for asking that question. I actually stumbled into it to some degree. I practice law in Texas, where I currently reside. I reside in Austin. I started practicing law right after law school, and I practiced for over 22 years. And there came a time when I was actually going to slow down my practice a bit because I had just been elected the president of the International Municipal Lawyers Association, which required me to travel around the country and abroad. So I thought I would just slow down a bit so I would have the opportunity to make those engagements and to make those presentations on behalf of the organization. And in doing so, I stumbled upon an opportunity to conduct some training for an organization called WJF Institute, William J. Flannery Institute. And actually during that time that I was a trainer, training on client development relationship management, I actually was offered a position with Akin Gump. And as a result of that engagement, I just fell in love with the world of business development and then later marketing and business development. At the time, there were two separate departments. And we know what that's like when you have a separation there. Law firms became much more inclined to combine the two. So I've been doing that for quite a while now and love it very much. So from practicing law to serving lawyers in law firms.
Excellent. Well, that is quite a story. So Iris, you've been around for a while, been in legal marketing. Well, yeah, certainly have a lot of experience. That's what I meant to
Indeed.
Say.
I love it. Thanks, Guy.
Yeah, of course. So you've been in legal marketing and business development space for many years now. What would you say are the biggest changes that you've seen from the time you started to today?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes, everyone would probably agree that technology has changed everything. It's changed everything from us, for us from a personal standpoint and a professional standpoint. For the legal industry, technology has been a complete game changer. And I think that it started out by clients basically demanding or expecting more from its attorneys. So we graduated from the traditional ways of communicating, the traditional ways of conducting business, to clients insisting upon extranets or real-time billing, things of that nature. And I think that we had to get with the program, if you will, get on the ball regarding technology in order to meet the client's needs. I think it started there in many ways, in many respects. And then as competition continued to evolve, and as it is today, it's not good enough just to be a great law firm or have great lawyers working within your firm. You've got to differentiate and add additional value. So I think we've all been keen to try new things and to be much more innovative in our approach. Technology has played a huge role in that regard. And then, of course, communication. There's such a saturation of everyone's inbox these days with emails, with client alerts, with all kinds of information that we're drinking from that fire hose of information, if you will. And we have to actually make sure that we are giving bite sizes that are meaningful And we have to be incredibly, incredibly focused on messaging and very, very customized in our approach to market. So I think that before it was throw out the client alerts, send out, you know, dozens and dozens and hope somebody reads it and calls us. Those days don't exist anymore, if they ever did. So I think that being much more mindful, much more responsible in terms of how we get the word out about our firm is vitally important. Before it was mainly, I think, back when I was even practicing, it was about socializing and entertaining and getting all that FaceTime. Now everyone's, you know, scrambling to have the same opportunities. But I think that we've gotten a little bit on the, I hate to say the word lazy side, but we've gotten really comfortable with sending digital messaging out. And so we're losing that touch, if you will. I think we have to get back to full circle on how we started, but with a little more focus and sophistication.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that personal touch does get lost a lot of times when we're leveraging digital communication. I wonder what your opinion is in terms of looking at it from a client perspective. How has marketing and client development innovations changed the way that law firms are perceived by their clients?
Excellent question. Excellent question. Guy, I really, you know, I've thought about this a lot. And just recently, within the last 30 days, I had the opportunity to interface with a lot of deputy general counsel, chief legal officers. I attended the Corporate Counsel Women of Color annual conference. Over 1,000 women and men were there representing corporate America. And those are the kinds of questions I ask, because it's one thing for us to have a perception, but it's another when we take the time to find out, what are other people thinking? What do they want? And that's the whole idea of the Platinum Rule. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But I just think that the way in which we're perceived by our clients, the only folks who can answer that question or give us the perspective is the client, right?
Absolutely.
So what I have heard and what I have been able to glean in the last few weeks in Atlanta during the conference was the programs that are much more thoughtful and much more customized to not just have the client's logo on a pitch material, if you will, or to include the client name by dropping it into some canned materials. You know, they can see through the perception that you want to deliver, that, you know, you really get them. But do you really? I think the innovations relating to thoughtful programming, conducting joint efforts when it comes to community engagement, inviting your client to co-host or co-sponsor something that is truly going to benefit other people, people that they have an interest in supporting, if you will, being of like mind. Let me give you another example of something I already mentioned, the client alerts. The clients, the GCs, CLOs, they tell me that if they receive another client alert, they're just going to, you know, scream. Because client alerts are typically something that really does give the client a heads up and really does inform the client that something is happening. And they get client alerts 2 weeks after a Supreme Court decision has been delivered. And so they've heard it on every single major cable news network, on local news. They've read about it. They have received information from other law firms. And then 2 weeks later, here comes your well-thought-out, well-written digital client alert, which is no longer an alert. It's really a new, more like a client nuisance. So that's what doesn't get the client's attention. Yeah. And I think that we have to find ways to let the client know that we do really get them. So it's going to require much more thoughtful, competitive intel. We have, for example, at our firm, Akerman, we have three competitive intelligence professionals in my department, in the marketing client development department. And we work very hard to make sure that our attorneys never sit anything out or never visit a client or talk to a client or pitch to a client without knowing intimate details about the client, the individuals who will be in the room, so that we really are talking to them about them and we're here for them. So I think that the ways in which we can change the perception is to let the client know that we're not just faking it. Some firms, you know, say be sincere even if you don't mean it. If you're not really in it for the client, and if you're not really focused on that client, you know, not distracted, not sending out mass emails or mass client alerts or mass heads up or newsletters. They don't need that. And it's not going to be read anyway. So you're wasting lots of time and energy and resources. So what I say is be more thoughtful, be much more focused, and really, really winnow it down to 10, 12 clients that you're going to focus on. And sometimes it's really a customized just for you client kind of exercise or program. And if you're not doing that, if you're not paying it, it's like anything else in life, even dating. If you're not really focused on me, I'm going to know about it because you're on your phone while we're having lunch. And it's sort of like that. These law firms are on their phone while they're having lunch with the client, figuratively speaking.
Yeah.
So I think that the best innovations are those that really, really focus with great intel. Now, it takes time, and it takes energy, and it takes effort. And thus, you're going to end up elevating your actual team because you're going to be looking for those folks who are smart, fast, energetic, and don't want to take shortcuts. We're not talking about microwave popcorn or microwave oatmeal. We're talking about somebody who really wants to take the time to do it the right traditional way and then go in with the innovation. It really is about the client. What's everybody's favorite subject, Guy? Themselves, right?
Absolutely.
So don't go in talking about how great you are. Talk about what you can do for them based on what you know about them.
100%. I mean, I love what you're saying. And it's something that I always, always tell our clients, right? It's unbelievable how much they focus on themselves and not focus on what the clients really need or where they are in their business. And we all know, Iris, I mean, you know, a client really cares about what? They care about themselves and they want to know, do you understand me as a client? Do you understand my industry? And do you have experience in dealing with the types of issues that I'm dealing with? That's what they care about more than anything. So I couldn't agree more with everything you're saying. And I love the concept of the client nuisance because you're 100% right. You know, all these firms, they want to be the first one out with the breaking news story or the breaking court decision. But you're right. They're going to get the same email from everyone else. And just because you're first doesn't mean anything, because most of the time, these people are going to see it in newspapers or on news source websites or legal trade publications. So you don't need to send the same stuff that everyone is sending. What I always tell our clients is take some time, analyze how this decision impacts your clients as individuals, right? And then send out a meaningful, as you said, alert or communications that says, hey, this just happened. Based upon what we know about you, it may have these implications. Why don't we set up some time to talk? That to me is really, really powerful. So I think you're completely right. I love it.
But I think sometimes we get so caught up in volume. Let's get this out to our 2,000 company mailing lists. And, you know, most of them get caught in spam. The others aren't going to be read. How about maybe look at a dozen or maybe two dozen that it actually applies to? And if you cannot take the time, I'm a huge fan, huge still. Some people may say it's old school, but I'm a huge fan of letter writing, card writing, where you put an actual stamp from the U.S. Post Office on it and it actually gets delivered and it never gets caught in spam. A note. Well, you can do the same thing with a customized email. And you can do that by having the conversation you just articulated, Guy. I know because we just talked at your retreat or we just had this conversation 2 months ago that this is one of your pain points. I want you to be aware of, just like you said, Guy, the following. Now, it takes time, and that's one thing that we don't have a lot of. But if you want to change the mind of your client, and you want to have the perception that, wow, this firm is for me because they pay attention to me, they understand me, they get me. If you can't take the time to do that, sometimes it could be two or three communications an evening, but make them meaningful and they will be more effective than some mass 2,000 company email that you're sending out or distributing through digital means. So yes, I think you and I are on the same page, and we know that that is one of the things that we are talking about today is the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's really going to still be about the person, that person at that company, and that person at that corporation, that person at that bank, that institution. that is going to want to feel like you get me. I'm not just one of your mass bulk emails that you're sending today.
Personal touch and knowledge of the client. Like telling them that you understand them and you're going to them with something that you know they care about. I mean, that's huge. And most firms, most lawyers don't take the time to do that. And I agree 100%. Let's talk about the platinum rule, since we mentioned it in our beginning. What is the platinum rule, Iris, and how does it apply here?
Well, we can't ignore the golden rule, what we grew up hearing about, learning about, and practicing, right? The golden rule is do unto others as you would want them to do unto you.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So the platinum rule is another, there's a book written about it, and the author escapes me, but it is definitely on my bookshelf. And the platinum rule is do unto others as they would want you to do unto them. And that means that you can't just say, well, if it was me, I'd like them to do X, Y, Z. If it was me, it's not about you. You have to know the client. And the reason why it's important here is we're talking about client-driven innovations and client-specific customization, right? So in order for you to know what your client wants you to do for them, with them, you have to do what? You have to communicate. And you have to spend time. Because how can I know what you want, guy, if I don't have a conversation with you? If I don't get to know you, I can't read it in a book. I can learn some things on from your LinkedIn profile. But guess what? The real nitty gritty about what guy wants, expects, is going to come from guy. And the platinum rule forces us to get in front of our clients and spend time with them. And of course, we're coming off of a pandemic. So post-pandemic, what did we do? We established some habits that were probably, you know, I mean, absolutely necessary, but now they're so comfortable for us to have a nice blouse or a nice shirt and tie, and then, you know, have our pajamas or our, you know, our tracksuit or our shorts, and we sit there in front of our computers, and it's so great because I can run into the kitchen and get that great cup of Nespresso. But what we have to understand is while you're doing that, somebody else is talking to your client, going to visit your client, spending time with your client, and really engaging. Because let's face it, we are humans. They talk about the babies that die when they aren't hugged and have the human touch. Well, we may not die in terms of leaving this planet in the physical sense, but we crave being with other people and interfacing and seeing others. Virtual is the next best thing, but folks want you to come and see them, and so they can see your eyeballs and they can see your hand gestures and they can see that you made the effort. Yes, it costs money, it takes time, but how valuable is this client? How valued is this client? How important is this relationship? And so, guy, I want to know. The definition of platinum room is, what do you want, guy? Not what do I think you want, because this is what I would want for myself. That's the paramount of client service and client delivery. We've got to know what you want in order to do it, in order to effectuate it.
I love it. The Platinum Rule is by Dave Kirpin, and he's the author of the book, The Art of People, for our listeners that want to know. I actually know Dave. I didn't realize that he actually came up with this. So it's pretty funny.
Well, I love it. It's been a while since I read it, but I continue to abide by it, because to me, that's the ultimate client service, is to know thy client from not your perception or perspective, but from theirs.
Love it. So Iris, let me shift a little bit and ask you, how has your past experience as a practicing attorney helped you? How has it helped you with the attorneys that you serve with and work with? How has it helped you with your team? You know, what is the value that you gain from being a former practicing attorney?
Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine doing what I do without it, although people do it all the time and it's not required. But I think that the benefit is what we've been talking about today. And that is know thy client, having been in your shoes, having walked many miles in your shoes for 22 years, having experienced what you experience every day, actually, is to me, the greatest benefit is I feel your pain. I understand your plight. I understand your priorities, being the client. I understand your pain points and addressing that in a way that is empathetic. And that's one thing I really, really, really work hard at, is being empathetic to the audience, whether it's one-on-one or a group of folks or a team. Having that empathy and that understanding brings about a much better result. I believe you said you asked about my team. How has it helped my team?
Yeah.
I think that what has happened throughout my career in client development and marketing is I've been able to innovate, make recommendations, suggestions, coach and train my team. I think that I have a world-class team of folks here. And we think a little differently because I know my role. I know what role I'm in, but it's not about pushing paper and attending meetings. It's about always thinking about how could we do a better job for you? How could we enhance your profile? How can we help you go to the next level? And not be afraid to ask those questions. And I think that I've empowered my people to do the same thing. And, you know, I'm a baby boomer, so it's not about intimidation and, oh, I hope I don't upset this person, or I hope I didn't ask too many questions. But being willing to raise your hand, make a recommendation, and it's not necessarily embraced. And yep. I think that comes with time. It comes with a little bit of confidence, but it also comes with knowledge. I'm constantly reading. I continue, while I'm not practicing, I continue to keep up my continuing legal education credits. Not for the firm or for what I'm doing at the moment, but it helps me to be sharper, to come to the room with questions, being inquisitive, and having that life learner attitude. I think that's what being a practicing attorney has done for me, and I still love living vicariously through the attorneys and looking forward to their wins, looking forward to their successes. And I'm not afraid to say, well, I have this recommendation for you. And they might say, no. And it's like, okay, I got it. But at the same time, they love it when I'm opening their eyes to new things from my perspective, from my experience base. And we do it together. It's not the Iris show. It's my team and I make recommendations that are brand new to every firm that I've worked for, every team that I've led. We have taken it to a whole new level and to greater heights because of that background.
Do you want to start a successful podcast that will generate leads for your law firm? At Good to Be Social, we work with many different law firms and help them to produce and promote their podcasts. Podcasts today are more popular than ever. In fact, today's internet users routinely use podcasts on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis to stay informed and be entertained. As this medium continues to grow, law firms don't want to fall behind and need to move beyond traditional written content and onto the digital airwaves. Unfortunately, when it comes to podcasting, many legal marketers aren't sure about where to start. With our latest ebook, The Law Firm Guide to Podcasting, readers can learn how to choose a format, a topic, and a name that will get you noticed, how to select and reach out to potential guests, the technology and the recording basis you know to produce a successful show, as well as how to measure the success of your podcast. So hurry now, go to the Good to Be Social website and look for the Law Firm Guide to Podcasting ebook. Do you feel that attorneys are more willing to listen to you because you are a former practicing attorney?
On occasion. I don't go around wearing it on my jacket.
No, I know.
However, most of them, when I interface and I interact, they know. And yes, I do think so, because it's because of the nature of the questions. But you can do the same thing by doing your homework, by researching. You'd be surprised over the years how many folks I've supervised that didn't know what was on the website relating to the practice that they were supporting.
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
The attorneys, they never read the profile of the attorney that they were serving, supporting. And it's easy to get caught up into the day-to-day grind of working on something for an attorney or delivering services. But you have to spend that energy to get to know. And I think that they respect the fact that the nature of my questions and the details of the work I put into serving and supporting them is reflective of my background, which includes being a practicing attorney. So So I do think they appreciate it. I do think that it's easier for them to ask for certain things. Sometimes an attorney will break it down and say, well, this is what this is. I go, yeah, I know. I used to litigate. So, and they were like, you did? Oh, okay. And then they start talking to me in legalese, so to speak. And we are on the same page, if you will. I'm in a service and support role, but they understand that I get them and what they do.
Love it. Love it. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges CMOs at law firms are facing today?
I can tell you what I'm experiencing and what, you know, I was just on a CMO panel just 2 weeks ago. So what I've heard from my colleagues, the biggest challenge right now is the talent wars that are real. You know, we hear about the talent wars yeah. in many industries and for many professionals. It's the same for us. It's the same thing for us who are seeking to retain the excellent marketers, the excellent client developers, business developers. Because we're living in this post-pandemic world that's offering so many other options, whether it's hybrid or full remote or more money, whatever the case may be, I think that we're all experiencing very large turnover rate right now. We are experiencing keeping great talent because training and coaching, obviously, you know, it takes a lot of time and you invest in people and then they go somewhere else. So I think that the biggest challenge facing us is making sure that we keep our people well-informed, well-trained, but also we empower them to do their jobs as a professional and treat them as such. And then I think a very close second to that is, and I just think this is always the case, but sometimes it's challenging to closely align your deliverables to what firm leadership expects. And I'm hearing that from others. In terms of what's happening with me is I'm very lucky to have ongoing, regular communications with the chairman. I am allowed to present at the board. I have regular meetings with the COO. We all stay in very close contact. And I think that's really important because alignment is critical to success for the team, not just the individual CMO, but for the team. If you don't know where your firm leadership wants to go, or if you don't know what they expect of you and you're afraid to ask, you're going to miss the mark each time. There yeah. has to be alignment and there has to be communication. We're going back again to communication. So mm-hmm. that's what I think that the biggest challenges are right now.
Love it. All right, Iris, we have run out of time, but before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't ask, what advice would you give to that marketing specialist, marketing manager, even directors who aspire to be CMOs at law firms? What advice would you give to them?
Well, for those aspiring to be CMOs, first of all, I think that, I know this may sound a little bit on the cheesy side, but I think that the advice I would give them is to always be empathetic. We talked a little bit about that, to have empathy, because even before the pandemic, but since post-pandemic, everyone is going through something. Everybody has their own private little traumas and dramas going on. We don't know anything about, and we may never find out, but we must express empathy for others. We must continue to be kind. We don't know what someone is going through. And it's not about us. And I would advise them to always prepare themselves to get on a more academic level, prepare oneself. And that means continuously read, continuously evolve, attend conferences, seminars. And if that means investing in yourself by spending your own money, do it. Because someone's watching and someone's taking note of the fact that you are investing in yourself. You want others to invest in you, you got to invest in yourself first. And I think that learning as much as you can and being as kind and empathetic and understanding. And lastly, I have to say the V word, volunteer, because someone is going to need you somewhere and they would never have thought about you if you didn't raise your hand. And this is a demonstration of leadership and a kind of sacrifice that people will remember about you.
I love it. That is such wonderful advice, not just for potential CMOs, but just for human beings in general. So thank you so much, Iris. It's really great to speak to you. I wish we had another half hour to talk to you, but I know you're busy and we're going to let you go. For our audience, if you enjoyed today's episode and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, just go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there. You can also listen to some of our great past episodes. Iris, thank you so much again for spending some time with us, sharing your knowledge, sharing your advice. It's really, really wonderful. And, thank you so much.
Guy, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure. Anytime. It was an absolute pleasure to be here. And thank you for asking me.
Of course. Well, we will definitely have you back again. All right.
I love it.
Well, to our audience, I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we will see you next time.